the Astra Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I am the Chief Investment Officer at Astra Investment Management. I am joined today, as I often am, by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John.
We're recording this on Friday, July 30th, end of the month. We're about to get a lot of new data for July, but we'll wrap up the June data with today's podcast. There's a decent amount going on. I'm not sure my nutshell summary of the economy has changed very much. The labor market continues to improve more slowly than the aggregate output numbers, but everything's going in the right direction, maybe a little bit more slowly than I had hoped or thought. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I don't think there's really been anything new changing week over week. Things are sort of ticking along about at the pace that we'd expect from both a supply and a demand perspective.
Let's jump in with the number that came out yesterday, U.S. GDP. Yeah, so that was reported as a miss. So the survey was saying 8.4, actual came out 6.5. It's not as big of a miss as it sounds, in my opinion. Consumers and business investment are super strong. You know, we'll see inventory restocking. Inventory has been a drag for the last several quarters. Residential investment will come back. The decline in federal spending in Q2 is perplexing. Maybe that is just reduced stimulus payments, I guess. But we are spinning out the childcare checks didn't hit up until July, right?
Right.
Overall, we are above our previous peak in last quarter of 2019, but below where trend growth would put us. We've got about 2% left to get back to trend, 1.5-2% to get back to trend.
Yeah, it is encouraging that we've caught back up to the pre-pandemic level of output. And as you said, it was a bit, 6.5% was a little bit weaker than estimates. But in aggregate, I actually think it was a pretty good report. Things like government spending are going to come back with the passing of an infrastructure bill. The much heralded infrastructure week has actually, it looks like it's going to come to fruition. And some of the other components that dragged on the report, things like inventories and trade, you would expect to improve over the next quarter or two. So in all, I think it was actually a fairly encouraging number.
Yeah, I'm not that optimistic about net exports improving, frankly. But there are areas where inventories were just sort of out of stock. Right? So inventories will almost have to build back. Before we leave GDP, I do want to talk a little bit about the inventories, just to emphasize the fact, and we've lost maybe 3, a little bit more percent of GDP in the last two quarters, just based on people drawing down inventories rather than building stuff. You can see that specifically in car inventories, for example, which are lower than they've been in 50 years. This is not the exact best number to look at because it doesn't have light trucks in it, but still a shockingly low number, the numbers that people would have said they would not get that low. And so eventually that is going to bounce back. You know, that's cocking the gun for future GDP growth.
Right. And I think part of this number is really the story of supply constraints that we've been talking about for a while. Bloomberg Economics actually strips out some things. And so if you exclude auto output, they estimate that GDP was actually up 7.2% because motor vehicle output was down 16.2% in the second quarter. Wow.
Yeah. And so that's interesting too, because the way that works in the guts of the report is that they're waiting for a few key components, but they've got the engine sitting around that actually builds up their inventories. So it's interesting, inventories still declining, even given this partial stuff they've got sitting around in Michigan.
Right.
I got the employment cost index a little bit. It was actually a little bit of a miss. People were expecting it to be up about 0.9% quarter on quarter. This is the best way to look at wages in the economy. The monthly number that comes out with the employment situation report does not adjust for the composition of jobs. So it's fine if nothing much is going on, but if you're firing all the low-wage workers with the pandemic, then not a great thing. And the employment cost index, which does account for compositional shifts, was up 0.7% in quarter on quarter. People are starting a little bit stronger. This is quite a strong number, even though it's not as strong as people were expecting. And I want to point out in particular, in accommodation food services, that's the hospitality area, you've got 10% annualized growth in wages over the last two quarters. And the wages in that sector are 9% higher than they were at the end of 2019.
Wow, that is quite the increase.
Yes. That should agree with your anecdotal evidence. So trying to lure workers back into the services sector. And again, just to go back to GDP, while services is still well below where trend would put it, it's increased a lot in the last two quarters. My personal experience, I've been on two trips. I've eaten out more. Nick went to Miami for an ill-fated tour of the, the capital. So that's the wage and salary situation. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think part of the story of the economy right now is this reorientation towards the pre-pandemic footing. And what that looks like, at least in the near term, is more and more of a shift towards spending on services and then also hiring services.
Right. Getting back from reduced levels, reducing our buying of stuff. We don't not gonna buy as many cookies, but we're going to have more trips to the whatever. So we had a Fed meeting this week. Do you want to talk about what the results of that was?
Yeah, I mean, they mostly stayed the course. I think that the chair was right to note that we have made some progress towards a substantial further progress. The labor market is still lagging, as I said, but there wasn't really a shift in policy noted. You have had some regional Fed presidents talk about tapering perhaps later this fall, but I wouldn't really say that's the consensus among the FOMC. I think they're going to be a little bit more patient than that. And then on the inflation front, although they do note that risks are weighted to the upside, that they do still expect that these price increases that we're seeing are transitory in these pandemic-oriented sectors of spending.
Yeah, as I think we were saying last week, it's not clear what the Fed can do to get more chips, right? Like, so you could have a recession so that people don't want to buy cars, but that seems like a bad solution. To the- Do you have a liftoff date in mind? Do you have a tapering announcement and or tapering substance beginning forecast?
Gosh, I mean, I would say December.
For announcement or for starting to taper?
For starting to taper.
So announcement in the September FOMC.
Right. What do you think about that?
Yeah. It's definitely possible.
So Bullard, who's the St. Louis Fed president, said he expects tapering to begin in the fall, and he wants it to be completed by Q1 of 2022, which seems, I think, quite aggressive. It's certainly possible. We'll have to see how inflation and output dynamics play out. But again, I don't think that's the consensus among voting members of the FOMC.
Yeah, and the FOMC has traditionally, unlike some other central banks, does like to go by consensus. When you look at digging the details, like the dissents are pretty rare in the FOMC. That's just sort of the culture. So they'll probably try to move everybody towards one sort of compromise. Yeah, I would guess I would expect an announcement in September or December. I guess September just feels a little soon, right? Like 2 months from now. But I think part of it is the substantial progress, right? Which is poorly defined. And I think one thing that came out of the press conference is that you're not going to get a definition. You're going to ask him a million different ways, what does substantial progress mean? And he's going to say, I ain't telling.
Right. We could also talk about PCE, which came out this week and is the Fed's official measure of inflation. The headline number was 4% year over year, while core, which strips out food and energy, was up 3.5% year over year. And right around now, we're starting to see those base effects that we've been talking about dissipate a bit. So this is more of a, I think, a real reading of where we are in terms of price pressures. It was a little bit weaker than expected. And I think overall, as far as components go, is the same story of areas that we would expect to be a little bit hot right now. One of the interesting things that came out of it was that inflation-adjusted spending on services was up 0.8%, whereas outlays on merchandise and goods was down 0.2%. But beyond that, I don't think there was anything really all that surprising in PCE.
Yeah, sort of consistent with the other things we've been saying, right? Services are in a little bit of acceleration. Goods may be a slight deceleration, but still a lot of supply constraints making itself being sorted by companies.
Right. So I guess moving on from the U.S., we've talked about GDP in the United States. In the euro area, we also got their output numbers for the second quarter of 2021, and growth was at 2%, which is a strong reading for the euro area. They're down about 3% from their pre-pandemic level. And there's some interesting differentiation between the members within that group. So places like Germany, which are very reliant on manufacturing, and had seen some of these supply constraints, particularly in the auto industry around chips. Germany was only up 1.5%, whereas places that are more reliant on things like hospitality and tourism, such as Italy and Spain, were up 2.7%, 2.8%.
Yeah, the vibrant South and the staid North is not the usual story we hear about European economy.
That's right. Somewhere in the Bundesbank, someone is seething.
There's things going both ways. Demand for Germany, demand for goods is way up. That's good for them. And a lot of their specialty is in making machinery and the goods that make other goods. So maybe manufacturers aren't believing the pop and buying enough machinery to really increase stuff permanently. But also, like you said, the shortages of components and just the shortage of shipping space is definitely constraining them too. Before we wrap up, I just want to go through some housing market numbers a little bit. So my sense there is that the housing market is coming off the boil a little bit. So prices are still up. Let's not mistake that, right? Prices are extremely strong and staying high. Supply of new houses is quite low. And the way that they count inventory is basically, if there's a permit or ground is broken, then it counts as a house for sale. And there's no contract, then it counts as a house for sale. Anybody who's built a house might know that there's a lot that happens between getting the permit and getting the keys to the front door. And basically that number of months within the inventory number, there's much more than usual of houses that are under construction and not yet started. So the inventories are even tighter than they appear at first glance of new houses. Applications to purchase are down somewhat off the peak. Sort of on the other side of the ledger, the number of people in forbearance continues to drop at a sort of a slow, steady rate. The percentage of families in serious delinquency is dropping at a fairly precipitous rate. So overall, housing market strong, not as strong as it was, say, 6 months ago. And within new home sales, the problem seems to be really that there's just not enough for sale.
We have a sense that some of these constraints that we've been talking about, things like very high lumber prices, that they're easing a little bit and that construction costs as they come down might allow more inventory to come online.
The lumber future is back to where it started, where it was 6 months ago. That is not necessarily a perfect representation of all housing prices. Yeah, I guess my sense of the constraint is more that home builders are a little bit worried because there's such a lag between starting the home and like when you get to sell it. I mean, I guess you get to sell it when it's still under construction, but I get the sense that people aren't necessarily believing 100% of the housing demand. And so they're not making as much new houses you might think given the increase in price. Like if this price had happened over 3 years, maybe it would have induced more supply just because people would believe it was going to continue more than they do. I'm not sure though. You have a thought?
No, I think that sounds right.
I think we'll leave it there. Next week, it'll be Rob and I talking about the employment situation report. And in the meantime, if you're hungry for economic data, you can go to the Astor website, astorm.com, where we've got blog posts and charts. You download the Astor Research app from your favorite app store, or you can contact your Astor representative, of course. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John. Have a nice weekend.
To learn more about Astor Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.astorim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Astor Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.